Young Justice Outsiders Season 3, Episodes 4 through 6. The big question is, where is Dick? Stay tuned to find out.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz
and the music drops again. This music, look, this music, along with the Law & Order SVU theme song, are my top two. These are my top two. I'm going with these are the top two theme songs of all shows. Now, that doesn't include the songs that you sing along to. I'm not going to include these. I'm talking about just the background, just the instrumental right there. Boom. Because it gets you in the mood for some Young Justice Outsiders Season 3. We are back, and literally we're back, back to back right now. As we discuss episodes 4 through 6, we're going to get to the bottom of some things. We're going to find out more about this meta-human trafficking ring. We're going to find out who's who and what's what and what's this Karaki girl's powers. What's Breon hurting about? Who's McGann's brother? And more importantly, where is Dick? My name is Taron. I will be your host and the one and only on the panel. We have people who are going to be joining the panel in and out, but for right now, it's just going to be me and each and every one of you, because we are live on the chat. So if you want to go to the chat, tune in and discuss. I know a lot of you guys were on the chat last time. I want to say greetings to Beast Wars fan. Thanks for being back in the chat. This is all about all of us. We also have some news and gossip and a special segment in which I want everyone, including myself, we're going to decide which character best exemplifies you throughout this arc. Now, we went through season three, episodes 1 through 3, and got to a good starting point. I mean, when the show came back full force, almost as if it never left. It picked right up. And what we love about Young Justice is the fact that it has so much details, so many characters, so many story arcs, so many storylines cross each other at the same time. We got a lot of that in these three episodes, episode 4, episode 5, and episode 6, where we get the we get the next series in the anagram, right? We're trying to prepare for the anti-life equation. Here, episode 4, we have private security. Episode 5, we have away mission. And episode 6 is the rescue op. Let's start with episode 4. As I stated previously, what we're going to do is break each episode. I know we get them in groups of threes, so we binge on three, but we're going to break them down to each episode because each episode deserves its own breakdown. Of course, I'm going to be with you guys and love to hear from each and every one of you in the comments below. Make sure to share and subscribe and tell your friends to tell their friends. You already know I'm on so many DC shows. I might as well write for the DC Comics. Let's go. Episode 4, Private Security. The big question is, where is Dick? And we saw that as a mantra of every single situation, because Dick Grayson has seemingly relinquished his responsibilities. And when I say responsibility, I'm talking about Breon. I'm talking about, at this point, still the unnamed Karaki girl, who we're going to start calling Halo anytime soon. And also with the whole mission. I mean, Dick Grayson has gone missing, and we all want to know where Dick Grayson is. Dick Grayson is in Star City. It seems that the metahuman trafficking ring has led him to Star City, and Dick Grayson is back to being Dick Grayson full force, where now he's just Nightwing. I mean, this guy is what happened to that break, Dick Grayson? What happened to resigning from the team? What happened to you sitting it out? You couldn't do it, right? I loved the security episode. It was lighthearted, it was insightful, and it was fun, and this is the reason why. We get to Dick Grayson being in Star City and meeting up with the Harpers. The Harpers. We have to discuss Bow Hunter, the Harpers, Zatanna and her father, Zatara, who is basically captured and encapsulated in Dr. Fate. Artemis and Halo, their relationship. Halo and Dr. Fate, their seemingly quick but extremely significant relationship, Dr. Jason Black Lightning, and these good VR goggles that seem to be all over the place. And at the end of this, we're going to go through each single episode and break it down in this way. Dick, Star City, what's he doing there? Meeting up with the Harpers. Who are the Harpers? When I say the Harpers, I mean Roy Harper, Arsenal, Jim Harper, Guardian, and Will Harper, formerly known as Roy Harper, and still known as the former Red Arrow. Are you confused? We were, because each one's aged differently, a clone of the original Roy Harper, who's the one without an arm. And Roy Harper, who's the original, looks the youngest out of all the Harpers, even though he's the first one. And then we have Will Harper, who's the youngest one, who looks the oldest. And then Jim Harper, who just looks like he's been bench pressing for years and years and years, because he was the former Guardian, also named after his grandfather, who was the original Guardian, Jim Harper. How many Harpers does it take to screw in a light bulb? I don't know, but it takes three of them to protect a load of VR good goggles. Bowhunter is Will Harper's company, security company. He's got a private security firm. He's grown up. He's living in the real world. Once again, I really enjoy the realism that Young Justice and the new DC take on things, especially if DC does one thing right, it's these cartoons. The cartoons are amazing. Batman Animated, Justice League. Oh, my God. Justice League Unlimited. Teen Titans. All of them are just done so well. Young Justice, to me, being the best and culminating the best aspects of all of them. We go to Bowhunter. Bowhunter is Will Harper's private security firm. This realism of he has to have income. Where does the money come from? Where does his money from this the house that they keep and for the kid and all these things? And he's got a contract. His contract is to protect a load of good VR goggles. Right in time for I think Nintendo has a new gaming system that everyone's getting. It seems to be a very similar thing. It's a play. The good VR goggles is a play on a Pokemon Go type atmosphere. It's augmented reality, something that I definitely believe is going to be the future. People put on the goggles, they see the real world, and they play this game where they're capturing diamonds and snakes and different things, and they're everywhere. Still waiting for the dubious aspect of these good VR goggles. Maybe it's a LexCorp situation. Maybe it's the light playing something. Maybe it's some form of brainwashing. We even saw that we even see that, like, the good goggles is just not only is it everywhere, but some of the superheroes have them too, which we're going to find out later, right? So Bowhunter is contracted to protect this load of goggles. And of course, the statement's made, who's going to steal these in broad daylight? Famous last words. Nightwing needs Will Harper's help, or at least that's what he says. And he's collected the other Harpers, Roy and Jim, which it would have seemed that it would be the hardest to collect Roy, Arsenal. He's the one with the most angst. He came off seasons 1 and 2 seeming to be the most angry at all times. And yet we see that there's a distance between Will and Dick that's just still there, where Will is questioning Dick's intentions, coming, and it all culminates and comes to a head at the end of the episode. But I would think that it would be the most difficult to recruit Roy. Roy's the one who's always been a little standoffish. He's always been the one who's too cool for school. So how did you get Roy on board? That was my big question, but he got him right on board. And of course, Jim, the Guardian, he's always been extremely helpful, and he's always been along for the ride. So giving him on, it's like a Cadmus reunion here, a clone reunion. If the good VR goggles are just VR goggles, I think that I'll be a little let down. I think that just because there's such a huge Easter egg in the whole season so far, they've come up at random times, and something about augmenting reality when it comes to Young Justice plays a part where I'm going to have to be worried and wary of them. I'm going to have to think about them and see how they play out. Dick Grayson, on the other hand, did not surprise me. This Dick Grayson, who basically is one-track mind, this guy who has to play the hero. Being a superhero is very much a part of Dick Grayson and who he is. As much as he tries to be like, oh, you know, I don't want to end up like Batman. No. Yeah, you do. You want to end up like a lighter Batman in the Young Justice comic, but still, you want to be Batman. You don't want to be just Dick Grayson. You've had a lot of chances to do nothing. You don't even let your friends get out when they want to. You bring them back in. So Dick Grayson, just admit it. Just hold on. Hold on to who you are, you know? Just be who you are. Be Dick Grayson. Be Nightwing. That's who you are on the inside. That's the real you. That's the concept of we try to be like Superman's really Superman, and then he plays and pretends to be Clark Kent when Superman wants to be Clark Kent. Batman is Bruce Wayne, but he plays Batman. No, Batman's really Batman. Bruce Wayne's a facade. I think Nightwing, you're somewhere stuck in the middle. I think that's a very dangerous place to be, where you're neither all, you have like 1 foot in, 1 foot out, right? And that's how your foot gets chopped off. Either go in or stay out. You're playing this dangerous game of the both. And I think that's something Will Harper's kind of picked up on too. I'm not the only one that's going through this. Will Harper's kind of picked that up. Now, they're protecting this drug, and you have basically effectively four superheroes protecting this load. Worst day for any crime organization to try to rob whatever these guys are protecting, these VR goggles or whatever they're going to be protecting, even though they're dressed up like goofy little cute security guards. Worst day. Bow hunters, you know, they always stay on point. It's great. It was such a fun, lighthearted way to approach it, right? So approach something, especially since it gets so deep as it goes on. You see, Brick and his criminal crew. Brick and his criminal crew are the ones who decide to get it. Now, did I notice that Brick and his crew were all black? Yes, I did. We know Brick's a known criminal. I hate to bring these things up, but they play. I mean, and here's the thing. To their credit, Young Justice has one of the most diverse casts. I mean, I'm not just talking black, white. I'm talking Martians. I'm talking we have all types of people. In this, right? We have all people from all walks of life, but I did notice the all black crew of Brick and his friends, and I'm sure you did too. You can fight it, you can think of it, but it still played a part, especially the hip hoppy Brick crew came to steal the VR goggles because it's a fortune, right? It's worth a fortune. Who's gonna steal these in broad daylight? Brick and his crew are. Brick and his crew hijack the truck. They come through and pretend to be the truck drivers. Will Harper notices something's wrong, says, but they checked out. Yeah, but not with the clipboard. The clipboard's never wrong. The clipboard is never wrong. He holds on. It's a clipboard. The clipboard is never wrong. Such a Will Harper thing to say, right? Because Will Harper's always this, he's on this moral high ground, this principle thing that we all love him for. Especially the Guardian's always chipper. Will Harper's the realist and Roy Harper was the pessimist, right? So they're all part of that ists, that contrast of where do you fall on this meter? Will Harper's right there in the middle. He's always the realist, right? Guardian's always the optimist. He's the optimist, and Roy's the pessimist. When they hijack the truck and they take it, you know, they don't know what they're up against. They have no clue. As far as they can tell, these are just four security guards getting paid, you know, minimum wage. Who's gonna put their life on the line against Brick and his badass crew? Well, the Harpers. That's who. The Harpers. Who, by the way, should start a singing group. The Harpers. That's a great name. The Harpers. I would listen to the Harpers. Like, especially if they were one of those crews that, like, hums or something, you know? Sounds like the doo-wop, bee-wop acoustic group. Who just like, boom, 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 the Harpers are here. That's what they sound like, all right? Led by Nightwing, who's not a Harper, but for this episode, we might as well make him one. Another aspect that plays the point is where Will Harper, you know, when his SUV is trashed. What's he say? He's like, oh, my insurance premium. You know, little things like that play. Little things like that play. They're lighthearted and fun, but they add a little touch of realism. They add a little touch of realism to everything. You know, wearing the outfit. Why he didn't have other guards that day? You know, Nightwing. It's a tit for tat. You guys help me, and I'm gonna. You recruit me. You want my help? You're gonna help me, and I'm gonna help you. Sure. So how does that play? How does that go? And in the chat, I know a lot of you guys are getting really talking about how we love the Harpers. Starcloak, we're out there, and of course Beast Wars fan, and everyone loves the line. Who's gonna steal those in broad daylight? And the Brick's crew, we're gonna steal those in broad daylight. It just plays a lot of fun. Plays a lot of fun. We see that Brick has no idea what he's up against, and of course Brick is a character. I don't know if he's exactly a metahuman. I would say he's got some type of metahuman capability simply because he's super resilient and impervious to harm. He's got this strong exterior that's hard as brick. I would assume that's where the name came from. They're having a hard time fighting him, but they're also not really sweating it. They're not losing sweat. They're just not going through the motions, but they're superheroes. They're in their training mode because they're having this, and this is the best part of this episode, right? Is that they're having that heart-to-heart on top of the truck. On top of the truck, Will Harper and Dick Grayson have a heart-to-heart where Will basically calls Dick out and says, you're trying to replace Wally West with me. And he says, must be the red hair, ha, ha, ha. But it's really because you need someone to put you in check and keep you reeled in and keep you down to earth. And Nightwing doesn't exactly deny this. This is something that's a truth. This is something that I fully believe. I think that, you know, the loss of your best friend is always going to be something. It's going to play a part. You're going to want to fill that void with a loved one. And Will Harper seems to be the best choice. He is the most, he's not Wally. He's like the anti-Wally, right? He's the anti-Wally. But there's an underlying principle that runs through both of them. Just keeps Dick reeled back in. Get you reeled back in. And that, the whole episode really culminates into that conversation, into the conversation between Dick and Will and how the four play a team. Nightwing needs to be a part team. As much as he wants to be solo, Batman solo, Nightwing's not. Nightwing started off a sidekick, right? He started off Robin. He needs to be part of a collective. He likes it. And as much as he hates leading, we see him always leading. That's who he is meant to be. The other storyline, let's focus on the concept of Zatanna and Zatara. We saw Zatanna lose her father in season two, loses her father to Dr. Fate. Dr. Fate basically has to replace his being with another person, chooses Zatara because he was going to choose Zatanna. And Zatanna, she did that, if you remember, it's in the episode where the magic is playing, where the grown-ups and the kids are in two different dimensions. So Zatara took the mantle of Dr. Fate to utilize the power, and Dr. Fate, not easy to, not one who easily just gives up a host body. Zatara takes Zatanna's place. Now, in Dr. Fate's kindness, because remember, this is a force, this is a power, this is a magical mysticism, allows Zatanna to visit her father every year for 1 hour, breaks her heart each time. She pleads for her father not to go back, but father knows, Zatara knows that the consequence to this would be far greater than the rewards of being with his daughter for even an extra minute. And it was a very heartfelt, emotional time, moment, especially if you'd seen season one and season two. Of course, season two, being that you met and understood Zatanna and how she plays and magic and mysticism and all that stuff. And Dr. Fate, look, Dr. Fate does a lot of good. It's just this is the bad. This, he needs a host body. And as a universal, you know, power, it just doesn't understand the little things, the subtle nuances. And the fact that Dr. Fate allows Zatara to meet with Zatanna is somehow a part of his strength, inner strength. And it's actually very interesting that this is even a bargain. And Zatanna knows better. Let's be real. Zatanna knows better. You know, you've been studying magic your whole life. You know what Dr. Fate is capable of. You know who Dr. Fate is. And you know Dr. Fate is not going to forgive. So why take... I understand the human need to get back that which you have lost. But it's lost. And that 1 hour, that... And he ages. The father, Zatara ages too. So it's like you're watching him get old. And you can only see him 1 hour every year. It's heartbreaking. There is a moment as we see Artemis and now Halo. That's the karate girl with the power. She's got this glow. She uses her power. She can fly. She creates these shields. She's got this healing power. We're not fully aware, and we don't know anything about her past. We've only seen her and from the start of the show. We don't know anything about it, and she doesn't seem to know anything about her own past. But she keeps getting these flashes, and she doesn't tell anyone about these memories, which makes me think something shady. It reminds me of the storyline of Stargirl in DC Titans. The alien loses her memory. I've got to think that there's more to the Crockett Girl than maybe she's got an alien presence, maybe, because there's just got to be something more to who she is and what she does. We cannot let that go. But there seems to be a strong connection between Artemis and Halo. Artemis has become a lot more empathetic ever since her loss, and here she is basically connecting with Halo. Both of them on their losing, whether it's the memory or a loved one or losing, it's that loss has connected them, a bond between the two. We also see a connection between Halo and Dr. Fate. Dr. Fate looks and goes, "You have such an old soul for someone so young, but who am I? Who is Fate to judge such things?" And Artemis for a second goes, "What?" Like, there's something more, but then Zatara walks in and it changes how that story flow goes. We need to know more. There is so much more to Halo. There's so much more. There's some, even when the power goes, she glows and they match. It's got to be something. We're looking to find out what it is. And that's what I'm seeing in episode 4, Private Security. I need to know more about Will Harper and Nightwing's relationship. I need to know more about these good goggles. I need to know more about Artemis and Halo. I need to know more about Halo as a person, and that's going to be something that plays in episodes 4, 5, and 6. And finally, the last relationship that we see, I need to see more about the Harpers, their relationships, the clones and the original, because it was very strained. If you remember season 1 going into season 2 and season 2 with the ball dropping, it was a very estranged relationship. I need to know what happened to Will Harper's wife. I need to know a lot of these things. And another relationship that plays a part is we see Black Lightning connect with Dr. Jace. Now, Dr. Jace, if you remember, is the doctor who seemed to be good, then seemed to be evil, but now seems to be good again. And she was trying to help the situation. She was just put in a position where she was helpless. Dr. Jace and Black Lightning are having a connection. Black Lightning, who has a very strong storyline in Young Justice, something that I did not see coming before I started watching the show, because, you know, I'm sure Black Lightning became popular, of course, with his own TV show, but right now he's just playing such a strong part, this emotional anchor. And then Dr. Jace and him seem to have this connection. You see little touches, you see them talking, you see them meeting. You also see them later chatting and talking, him trying to help her. He feels her pain. He understands. It's a lot going on. And, I mean, is Will Harper going to be the Wally West substitute? The line of the show, "You're a clone. You're the youngest guy here." That was it. So let's go into episode 5. Episode 5 is Away Mission. Away Mission is the concept of, also, we've seen Ran, but we hadn't seen any other planets. We hadn't seen a lot of outer space stuff, except for that glimpse of Ran. And here we have a whole episode in where Bear, if you remember Bear, he played a part with Superboy and, of course, Wolf, and coming back and looking for the motherboard and the cycle. And he comes back, and Bear, who's now, you know, he's a new god, something very curious happened on his planet, because we get to see Orion, we got to see New Genesis, and in New Genesis, you know, there's this thing where the new gods live in the sky, and all the bugs, as they call them, the bugs, live on the earth, on the ground. See, Orion uncharacteristically betray the bugs. The bugs bring him, you know, this mineral that's very precious, and he just betrays them. Something Orion would never do. Bear needs help, human help. Why? Because they detected human DNA when he was investigating. Everyone knew something was wrong. Orion wasn't even on New Genesis. He has been off-world for some time, possibly dealing with whatever's going to be going on with Darkseid and Vandal Savage and all that. That's the only idea that was fathomable to me, right? we see that who is thrown in. He's come in for Super Bowl's help, but ends up with McGann, and McGann brings a whole crew of people. McGann brings her crew, including Kid Flash. Kid Flash, of course, being the Flash from the future, who took on the mantle of his you know, past relative, Kid Flash. Blue Beetle, Static, Wonder Girl, and of course the new magical girl, Cassie, who we're going to see more from, I would assume, brings them, because Superboy can't. He has to stay and deal with the Breon and Halo stuff and them meeting up. So McGann goes. Perfect timing. McGann goes, and why is it perfect timing that McGann's the one involved? Because when she gets there, she senses a presence that's very familiar to her. She takes off on her own to basically check it out, and she finds her brother, who is going by Ma'alif'ak, which is his own moniker for himself. And she says it's a rabid beast the Greens are afraid of. Her little brother, McCann. McCann and McGann, right? So McCann has become, and this is what I was talking about. There's that social commentary aspect to Young Justice. We're talking, McCann has become an extremist. He has basically joined their version of ISIS. And, or whatever extreme organization where they feel oppressed and now they must stand up and fight the red and green Martians. And by the way, it occurred to me personally, I don't know what you guys think, but for a world that's not supposed to be void of Martians, there's a lot of Martians alive, right? John Jones was supposed to be the last Martian, the Martian Manhunter, but there seems to be a lot of Martians, and now we see something going on with the white Martians versus the green Martians and the red Martians. I didn't even know there were red Martians. That was new to me. So sees her brother has joined an extreme group. The white revolution is against the greens and reds and is using some of the kidnapped Earth metahumans. This pus guy, this guy who has like these boils on his back, who pusses out, and a guy who's basically like some type of plasticky, aloe-y, shape-shifting type thing. But they both obviously have their neck and they're being controlled. And he says, you know, the means justify the ends, basically. Something very extremist to say is when you basically justify doing evil because whatever you're doing is evil is the lesser evil because you're gonna stand up for you. And he says that it's a trade. The reason he is shapeshifting and acting like Orion and creating this psychic mold between the Forgers, Hive people, the Mantis and all of them, because he's trying to create a rift because he feels that they're oppressed too and that they need to stand up to their new gods the same way that he feels the white Martians need to stand up to the green and the red Martians. He's justifying social commentary, justifying. Interesting because he's not doing it out of the kindness of his heart or because of his principle. He's doing it because he was promised that if he does this, that something or someone or somehow will help him and his revolution. We're trading arms now. That's basically what's going on. You do this, and then I'll do that. And we never find out who. In fact, he kills the two metahumans when he fails. McGann and McCann go into a psychic battle. And in this battle, of course, McGann, being possibly the greatest psychic mind of the current generation, bests her brother, and it's basically she's taming it. She's not going full force like we saw her in the past. She is keeping it down because she still cares for her brother. Her brother's full of anger. I don't even know, McGann. This isn't your brother anymore. This is an enemy. McGann is really transformed into Ma'alif'ak, and I enjoyed this episode for what it did, but I mean we have to see that. And then of course his actions does affect Mantis and his people. They're like, we can't trust you, and we can't trust them about the humans and the new gods and anyone else, and we have to do our own thing. And that's what it is. Hate begets hate. And McGann tries to tell him, no, love is what can fight all this. And she has found love on earth. She shows examples of love one after another. The different relationships that she has come into contact with that has given her meaning and her life meaning and her happiness. And she tries to impress this on her brother, and it doesn't work. It does not work. It's crazy. It's crazy. And now the new gods, Mantis, the new gods deserve death, right? The forever people, they deserve death. Really cool. Great to see New Genesis. Great to see that. We also saw little things that were Lucas Carr came to play. We got to see a little Lucas Carr. We got a mention of Tim Drake, you know, wishing Tim Drake was there. We saw a little annoyance by Cassie about Tim Drake. Tim Drake wishing Tim Drake was there because he's a brilliant detective. And they felt like they needed a detective. And now going into the third storyline that plays out. So we had the storyline with the New Genesis. We had the storyline. And then we have the storyline with what's going on in the regular world. Brian and Superboy. That deserves a comparison. That angst, that anger. If you remember, Superboy, season one, when he was released, he was just angry all the time. And it took Megan, and it took the team, and it took patience, and it took resilience in order to make that work. And we see this in Brian. We have this anger. Brian's just always angry. Oh, I'm angry, man. I'm angry, man. And they're worried about it. And Superboy is the number one staunch complainer. Right? Ironic, right? And he even brings it up. He knows, look, I know. It's crazy that I'm the one bringing this up. I'm the one talking about this. But man, he's just full of anger. I don't think he's ready for anything. He's not ready to be on the team. He's not ready to be a part of us. He's not ready to really help us. And Brian is, you know, he's got this Geo-Force power, which of course they eventually nickname him Geo-Force. Man, his power is just, it feels angry. It's just like this hot lava. I'm upset. And Superboy, of course, you know what they say. People are a reflection of yourself. You see them as like a mirror. He's the one who brings it up, but he's also the one who's the most qualified to bring it up. He is. Last but not least in this episode that we have to talk about, of course, Brian can't go home to Markovia, but the other Markovian is also without a home and without memories and without a past. And of course, that is Halo. We are still learning stuff about Halo's past. It keeps coming up. Who is Halo? Everyone's trying to figure out. I mean, they run a program just to figure out who this person is. And then something even cooler, Halo, who's quickly becoming the most powerful, by far the most intriguing character on the show. Halo's power keeps changing. Now she's got this like beam that she can shoot, and it's so powerful it shoots her back and knocks her unconscious. She's got this powerful beam, and I feel bad about the trees. Let's be real. Like, he's like, not my trees, but yeah, the trees. These powers of Halo's, where do they stop? Where are they even coming from? What's this manifestation? How is she becoming this super, super duper powerful person? Another thing that I really like that was brought up, and it was actually brought up in the episode 4, but it plays again in the episode 5, is the fact that we now are confirmed that the covering she wears is a hijab, making her a Muslim. We knew that about Karakis, so to speak. That's how they were played. But it was just very interesting. It's like the superpowered Muslim. I do want to know ultimately if anyone was actually upset about the way that they're portraying it, especially with the tiny smidge of sexuality when it comes to play, when Brian loses all his clothes and then Halo's like, I like your form and nothing's wrong with your form. And another thing that's very curious is that Halo seems to know nothing of her past. She's learning English, but she's learning very quickly. She's remembering, as she's trying to put it out, and she knows like random things, and she's not telling anyone that she sees her past. She's not telling anyone that sees her past. But for all of you After Buzzers that want to see your future, do me a favor. Just know our network produces after shows for nearly all of your favorite TV shows, from dramas, reality TV, sci-fi, and more. There is no network that works harder to serve their television fans, but we need your help. We're asking that you please subscribe to one or more of our YouTube channels. By subscribing to our channel, YouTube will suggest content that's tailor-made for you, and you'll help AfterBuzz continue to grow. And if you're worried about pesky notifications, don't be, because they are optional. Just click them off. So hit that subscribe button now for this channel and check out our other AfterBuzz YouTube channels as well. Let us know you did so in the comments, and we will thank you on air. For now, thanks for being the best fans and for helping us be the ESPN of TV talk. We appreciate each and every one of you. Let's go really quick to the chat and see what's going on over here. I want to see Wonder Girl throwing shade. That's coming from Timberwolf 410. Forger. Yes, Forger got exiled. And that is going in. I'm going to discuss that going into the end of episode 5 and coming up in episode 6. Once again, another piece of the social commentary I was talking about. We're talking about immigration, refugees, people without a home. Another analogy in some ways of everything going on in the world. It's actually very interesting. It's very interesting. And yes, you are nicely shaped. Starcloak, I will be discussing the battleship and the sphere. So obvious, girls. Let's discuss about some of that. And I love how they tweaked her civilian name from Gabriel Doe in the comics. That's a great, great point. Timberwolf 410. Let's discuss episode 6, Rescue Op. Boom. There it is. Rescue Op is coming off. We're going to discuss Black Spider. We're going to discuss Halo, Breon, and Forger Hive. We're going to discuss Bioship. Discuss Breon going on a mission. Dr. Jace. League of Shadows. Infinity Island. The Outsiders team mention. And, of course, at the end, one of the soldiers says what I thought was Gray's son, but turns out to be my son. Who is that soldier? And Halo being Gabriel Dow. Or Violet, how they played on the name from the comic book. Let's discuss Rescue Op Episode 6. Starts off with Black Spider being Black Spider. Now, how is this not a copyright infringement on Spider-Man? I have no idea. Smart-ass quips. We know Black Spider is negative. He's evil. He plays for the League of Shadow. And he basically kills this guy, Jakar, or as he's trying to, but he's not the one to kill him. Someone drops a boulder on him, something that's not Black Spider's character or way of doing stuff. Is that Princess Terra? I want to know what you think, because we've already decided that Princess Terra has the metahuman gene, that she's possibly still alive, and that if she does have a metahuman gene, as we saw with Delam, as we saw with Breon, and now we're going to see with Terra, has a geoforce possible power. That's the concept, right? Maybe that's going to be the prevalent power in the Markovian bloodline, but that's the concept, is they have the metagene, and her metagene could easily be one of Geoforce as well, and she could have easily just, boop, dropped the boulder right on Jakar. We don't know, but we do know that Black Spider is a part of the League of Shadows, and that's the information. That's all the information Breon needs to know. Breon, of course, gets angry, needs to find Terra, and because he's been looking for his sister. Black Lightning comes in with Dr. Jace on the phone. That's the connection that we talked to about before. They're talking on the phone. He wants to help her. She feels horrible about what has happened. That's how we know that redemption is what makes her good. In the comics, whenever there's redemption, you're a good person, right? Boom. Breon's not trying to hear it. Breon is fine. Thank you. He's that guy, of course. Doesn't want to talk to Dr. Jace. Doesn't want to talk to Dr. Jace until he actually needs her help. And that's when he decides to go on a rogue mission to Infinity Island to fight the League of Shadow to get his sister back, because Nightwing, of course, is like, we think that she might have this power. And it's like, because that's the Nightwing way to do things. The way Halo, Breon, and Forger get together and they meet and start that friendship, they all have something in common. They're all basically exiled. They're all without a home. They're all without their homeland. They are refugees. And that is a very interesting aspect of what that social commentary of the show. Halo, Breon, and Forger play. Breon's, of course, super excited to meet an alien. And Mayan's like, I'm a Martian. Superboy's half Kryptonian. He's like, yeah. But a real alien, because he looks different. And that's something of a bit of a social commentary too. Halo, Breon, and Forger. Forger, also another piece of social commentary, which I hope everyone caught, is the concept of not using, or the complexity of using pronouns with an entity that does not have the same boundaries and the same boxes of pronouns that we are accustomed to. And that's something that's being played out in the media and in the world today, where we're thinking of pronouns and we're thinking of he's and she's and they's and they's. Well, that's the concept. It's not so simple with everyone, right? So Forger speaks of himself in a third person because he sees himself as a collective part of the hive, and he forms this hive Hive with Halo, Breon, and Forager. They clearly have a strong bond, a bond so much so that they are willing to put their lives at risk and follow Breon to help him in his endeavor, fight the League of Shadows, which is an extremely dangerous endeavor. Ra's al Ghul is not someone you want to mess with. And Infinity Island is the base of Ra's al Ghul. They move into the bioship. The way that came about is, of course, they didn't know where to place them. Forager knew that they were talking about them as they ate these apples. And that was a questionable part, is that Halo didn't know what an apple was. Like, she had never tasted one, right? How far back does her memory loss go? Do you just forget apples? I don't know. But the bioship becomes their new home. It goes from a car to a caravan. At first, I thought it was like Megan using some new shape-shifting, but no, it was just the bioship. The bioship's been there all along, and of course, it's been with Megan, because that's who you know, the bioship belongs to. That's that, or at least that's what we think, until the bioship becomes a newest member of the Halo Breon Forager Hive. Forager loves Forager some bioship, I'll tell you that. So, Breon goes on this mission. Breon goes on this mission and to fight the League of Shadows, despite being told not to. Very, very Superboy season one of him. Superboy has done that several times. We've seen it. And one culminating in how he met Bear in the first place, right? So very Superboy of him. We see the same story arc that we saw in Superboy. Goes to the League of Shadows, fights on Infinity Island. This fight between between Breon, Halo, Forager, and the Sensei, who at first, for a second, I thought this was like an aged Ra's al Ghul, because I'd never seen the Sensei had the Ra's al Ghul figure. I didn't know. I wasn't sure. I was like, did they just misdraw Ra's al Ghul? How did it go? But no, it's just the Sensei, one of the trainers of the League of Shadows, and this one guy basically hands all three of them, despite the fact that they're all three super powered humans, and Forager, of course, having the super like thing where he rolls up into a ball and just hits things in his armored shell, he takes them on like it's a piece of cake and snaps Halo's neck. Wow. Snaps her neck. Now, we know that she is basically immortal, able to heal herself, but Breon has no real clue about that, and he mourns her, and I'm thinking, is there something happening between Breon and Halo? That would be a very interesting twist. I mean, he even names her Violet, because she's like, I want a secret name and a name, because you're Geo-Force and Breon, I want a secret name. He names her Violet, which is a very cute name. It's I think it's a reference to his mother's favorite flower. I'm thinking that's what it is, but it's something, whatever. Violet, maybe I just made that up in my head. Who knows? But I'm sure you in the chat are going to tell me what you think. Breon and Halo have this like special connection. Now, this connection, it's reminiscent of the Jace Black Lightning connection in a way, but it's also, it's on its own. It's like, it reminds me of Megan and Superboy. Remember when Megan liked Superboy and then Superboy was reluctant because he's like all in his head, and then of course he had to give in. I mean, Halo is beautiful. She's sweet. She's super powered. What's not to like? And Breon's royalty, that would cause an international conflict if a Markovian and a Karaki got together. That is a very interesting perspective and way to look at things. I mean, we can't not question that connection between these two. And then of course we see Ra's al Ghul. Now, Ra's al Ghul coming, bam, Ra's al Ghul. Remember when I said Lex Luthor and Joker, if you remember the last episode, I was like, Lex Luthor and Joker, my top two DC comic supervillains of all time. And despite the dark sides and all those guys, Ra's al Ghul is definitely my top three. I just love Ra's al Ghul. I like Ra's al Ghul. I like his principle. I like his conviction. I like the fact that he is infinite in his manner of thinking. It's very interesting and intriguing to see Ra's al Ghul. His immortality is of the Lazarus Pit, but it has a lot to do with who he is. And of course, he's the grandfather of Damian, you can hate and love Damian, but whatever. And I think we might have seen Damian at the end, because we saw Talia come up with the baby, and we see the soldier say, my son, which we're going to talk about really quick. But Ra's al Ghul comes. Ra's al Ghul, of course, you know, definitely one of the most dangerous people in the universe. Ra's al Ghul. There's no question about it. I don't care what powers you have. And Ra's al Ghul allows them to leave. Nightwing explains the situation. We're just here to take the kids and leave. And Ra's al Ghul's like, go. And then and he drops some bars. His bar is number one. He's not in charge of the League of Shadows anymore. You don't see any around, he says. Number two, he refuses to tell them if who the leader is. Who the leader is. And I mean, it's clearly one of the members of the Light. Maybe it's Vandal Savage. They Artemis asks, is it my father, you know, Sportsmaster? And he basically says, no, it's not Sportsmaster. Don't worry, it's not him. Is it my sister? He's like, get out. Get out. You need to go, right? Because, you know, Artemis's whole family is basically supervillains. It's just really cool. It's a very good scene, very fun, very, very action-oriented. It played a huge part, and those were gems. Those are definitely clues into what we're going to look forward to in 7, 8, and 9. One of the other strong points is, of course, the conviction of the team to be a hive. We're together. We want to be a part of the team, but we're outsiders. A little drop, the outsider thing, but we know that Outsiders is actually a reference to to Batman's Black Ops Force. And Nightwing goes from angry to accepting in a matter of second when he goes, that's the conviction I was looking for. That's what I want. People who are willing to be a part of this team. And that is a throwback to the Young Justice themselves when they needed to form a team. If you remember, they weren't a team. They were just a collective, and now they've become a team. Halo, Breon, and Forge's hive becomes one and all. Halo, who we find out now for a fact is Gabrielle Devoe, and she says, no, I'm not, as she gets flashbacks when told that name of being mistreated by Markovian. She says, no, I'm Violet. She changes her own past, even though I think there's so much more. And I still need to know if she was one of the reasons why the Queen and King are killed, and if that's going to be a big fight between Breon and Halo, because I could see that playing a lot of things to come. And one of the soldiers, of course, at the end, and this is the oof moment, is it Batman? Is it Batman who says my son and looks at Talia? I mean, could be brainwashed. We saw that in Batman Bad Blood, the animated movie. Talia's brainwashed Batman before. I don't know, and it's very interesting to see. I would love to hear your predictions. I can't wait for 7, 8, 9. I'm giving you throughout. Let's go really quick before we got to go to news and gossip, please.
AfterBuzz TV News.
The news and gossip really quick is that Darkseid and Randall Savage, there is going to be a huge Darkseid revelation. There's going to be a huge action scene with Darkseid and a big payoff. So we know that. We know Randall Savage. We know that they made some type of contract with Darkseid. We saw him deliver him War World. Don't know what's going on. Randall Savage right there holding the cop, cheering everything. Here's the thing. We've been told that there will be a Darkseid payoff, so look for that in episodes to come. I don't know if we're going to get that in part one. This is a two-part series, each part, of course, being 13 episodes. So let's see what happens in the next three. But I guarantee you, by part one, we're gonna see a bit of the Darkseid. If not, get the payoff in part two. So that's so much for news and gossip. If you have any news and gossip you want to send our way, we'd love to hear from you in the comments below. Special segment, of course, being I want you to pick the character that most exemplifies who you are. In this arc, character that I felt that connection with would have to be Ra's al Ghul. Drum roll, please. Yes, Ra's al Ghul. When he does the situation where he's like, ask too many questions, he's like, get out. Like, I definitely play that part when people ask me too much. I don't want to tell you, and you're asking too much. I've given you as much as I'm giving you here. And he's like, get out. Just get out. And it's just so quick and so fun, and it's such a good scene. So I'd love to hear from you and who you play and who you feel that connection to down below. A lot of us might feel a connection to those refugees, the Forger and Breon and Halo as people who've just been exiled. I don't know what you think, but I'd love to hear from you in the comments below. Make sure to share and subscribe. I will be back next week as we examine episodes 7, 8, and 9 of season 3, Young Justice, Outsiders. From now till then, my name is Taron. Find me on all social media at I Am Taron, all across the board. Tell your friends to tell their friends, and we look forward to seeing you right back here next week after Buzz, Young Justice.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.